Welcome to the Hoops Hype Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 209. We post new episodes every Monday and Thursday. Today, Brian Kalbrowski is my co-host, and we're joined by two special guests, Adam and Craig Malamud, who are the creators of Game of Zones on Bleacher Report. The final season of Game of Zones is underway right now, and new episodes come out every Thursday. If you missed the first two episodes of this season, there's a link in the description of this episode so you can get caught up. Adam, Craig, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Doing well. Excited for our third episode to come out soon. So. Yeah.
Not enjoying the quarantine.
Well, we are huge fans of Game of Zones here, so this is going to be very fun. Let's start back at the beginning. How did you guys first come up with this idea? How did the show first come together?
Oh, man. So the first inkling for it happened. We were making a show before Game of Zones called Sports Friends, which was on Yahoo Screen. And that was just athletes hanging out, talking, and it was just a silly show. And we had an idea to do this Game of Thrones. We were watching Game of Thrones at the time. We thought it'd be funny to do a Tom Brady spoof with the Patriots as Lannister or something like that. And we just kind of had that idea, but it was too off brand for the show Sports Friends. And so we had a meeting with Bennett Spector, who worked at Bleacher Report, who was a fan of our stuff, about maybe working together. And we pitched him on this idea of doing a Game of Thrones mashup cartoon initially for the NFL. And then he suggested actually that maybe it should be, what if we tried NBA? And from there, we made the first one, and then people seemed to, the Venn diagram of Game of Thrones and NBA fans was large enough to make it a hit.
And you guys, we were talking about this before we started recording, but you guys initially just made one episode. You didn't think it was going to be this, episodic thing. It was going to be a one-time thing. How did that kind of morph and turn into, a series where you have seasons and a bunch of different episodes?
Yeah, so when we were asked to do a second episode, because the first episode had done so well, we at first were how are we going to make this? We had already used all the obvious players from the NBA and mashed them up with the obvious storylines for Game of Thrones. And so we were digging deeper into storylines. But then after a while, the following year, Bleacher Report wanted us to do it again. And, we for a few episodes, we kept doing the same thing. And then we decided, we're going to break free a little bit from being really strict to Game of Thrones and instead try to develop our own universe and our own canon. And so we put together a show Bible and sort of developed the show in the opposite direction that you normally develop an animated series, where you normally would pitch it with all the pitch materials and the structure of it ahead of time. And instead, we figured that out after we started making the show.
Yeah, we had to reverse engineer a viral video into a series. And yeah. It wasn't only that, there's all these rules we had to deal with, because it was we have part of this is referencing the real world NBA stuff. Part of it is from a show, Game of Thrones, referencing a show. And then how can we also tell a story in this in some way?
Yeah, absurd document where we were okay, so how does the economy work? So I guess if your team is doing well, your city is wealthier, so the Heat, that's why they're the Lannisters, but then the Nets or the Sixers are in flea bottom, and then we're okay, what's religion like in this world? Well, different cities would have different types of religions and sort of be early medieval times where you go to a different area and they all believe in the hinky faced God. Sorry for all the Sixers references. Sixers guys, and then you go to New York, and it's the triangle. Everyone worships the triangle, and so that was a lot of fun figuring those things out.
Well, I mean, how did you guys? You do such a good job of fusing NBA storylines and players with Game of Thrones storylines and characters. What's your process for coming up with new ideas and different scenes to parody?
That is the $1 million question that I wish I had an answer to, because it'd make our lives a lot easier when we wrote these things. I don't know. We don't know what our process is. And so it's always crap, we have to do another one of these. How do we do this again? There really isn't. Go ahead, Craig.
I would say what we do is we'll just watch a ton of Game of Thrones, and we'll just what I do at least, and I'll just write this part, this kind of seems like this guy, or this would be funny. What I'll generally do is see the structure of like a scene, and I'll be like, okay, this would be good for like, you know, you have like a status difference between like, you know, it's Tywin Lannister and like Arya serving him. So like, you know, we could find a rookie with like a coach or something like that, and that could be a similar. And then Adam often is like better at figuring out the more basketball specifics, because Adam is a little bit more into sports than I am. So he generally is more fluent in those things. And so he'll say like, oh, you know, Doc Rivers is a lot like Stannis or something like that, you know, or and eventually we throw enough ideas into a document, and then like something will stick, and we'll be like, oh, okay, that's funny. Let's see if we can make that work. And it'll keep snowballing from there.
Yeah. I would also add to that, like a lot, the raw ore of like what we build around is just something that we laugh at or think is interesting. So it could come from a conversation about like, we'll get in the morning, we'll like talk about what's going on, we'll like read Twitter and Reddit and like get a feel for like what people are talking about. I usually listen to a podcast on the way in and just kind of start thinking. And then I just like throw a raw idea out. And then if we laugh at it, there's something there. There's something there. If there's a raw emotion there. And then from that spark, we just continue to iterate every step of the process. So like it's part of the idea, but a lot of it is just the process of continually iterating. And so it's like, okay, let's talk about it more. Let's have another writer's meeting. Okay, let's build out some things for this. Let's start working on a script. Okay, this script sucks, like eight versions later. And then it's like, let's bring in the experts from Bleacher Report. Let's make sure this resonates with like the fans of this team. Who would be the right guy for this? Who is it? Then record, and when we're recording, we're also like, say it this way, what if we said this? Oh, that's funny improv, let's go with that. And it's continually iterating all the way through animation and like directing and acting, that like I think ultimately it's just little changes and constantly distilling it, and that's sort of the process, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes we get lucky. And we have this metaphor that Adam uses a lot, which is what we call loose Jenga pieces, where like, you know, when you're playing Jenga and like some pieces like really don't budge and other pieces like just pop right out. Like sometimes we have like scene ideas that are just like, it just clicks and we just know it's going to work. Like the tampering scene with LA and like pushing Bran out of the tower, spoiler alert if you haven't seen episode one. Like that being the Lakers and like AD and LeBron, like, you know, like pushing Lonzo out, you know, like it was just like clicked and it just all flowed perfectly from there.
But like the Carmelo Anthony one was like the one where he is on the Rockets and like then he gets flown out with on a trebuchet or catapult, I forget which one. And like, that one like took forever. That was a tough Jenga piece. The lottery one, we just couldn't figure out. Like that one was a tough Jenga piece and it just like kept tapping on it. We just couldn't get it through.
Dirk was easy.
Yeah, Dirk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Game of Zones fan, and I've never seen Game of Thrones. I think we talked earlier about like the Venn diagram being so focused on people who like both, but I think we kind of also addressed how realistically, you know, you can be into one without being into the other, but that one has to be NBA. Where do you think that comes from? I mean, how do you find that balance where it's like capturing the imagination of a basketball fan without necessarily understanding the references?
Yeah. Well, what I'd say is, so I represent, I think, a little bit more, I like to stick to Game of Thrones. I'm a little more of a Game of Thrones purist than Adam, whereas Adam is more of a basketball prioritization like mindset. I think Adam is ultimately right on this, because like I think that what's more important is we get the basketball right than that we get Game of Thrones right. Whereas like I want to be like, no, we made this character Bran, he's got to stay Bran forever no matter what, and the basketball will bend to fit that. But ultimately, like, people will know the medieval tropes and they won't, you know, like we can't make stuff up about what's happening in the NBA too much, or else it's going to be frustrating and not resonate with people. It's like true. I don't know, Adam, if you have anything to add there.
Well, when thinking about the show and writing the show, I think like about for it's got to work for basketball fans. It has to work for basketball fans. Like that is who I picture in the audience. I picture like NBA Twitter. I picture Reddit. I picture like just like internet basketball fans. And that's who I hope it's funny for. It's hard for me to envision what the experience is like for someone like yourself, who like, because we write it as people who've seen all of Game of Thrones and who know NBA, and like to some extent, like we're not like expert NBA people, but like, you know, as fans, it's hard for me to like model out how the experience is for you as someone like not knowing those Game of Thrones references. And it's actually interesting to me to think about what, because so much of it, like the ideal fan, like it's written for fans who know both. And we just hope that it plays for everyone. It's like that, that deodorant that was like, I guess maybe it's like a problematic slogan now. What was like strong enough for a man? What was the thing? Like, it was like something like some deodorant that was like strong enough for a man, but pH balance for a woman. That our show is strong enough for someone who just knows NBA, but pH balance for someone who knows NBA and Game of Thrones.
Beautiful.
I love it. Well, and you guys, I mean, you do all of the writing, animation, and voices. So, I mean, you guys are doing a ton for every episode. How long does a single episode take, and can you kind of walk us through what that process looks like?
Yeah, the so in the beginning, to go biblical here, Adam and I did everything, and it was some help from this guy Pat Keegan, who now is a storyboard artist on like Rick and Morty and stuff, but he would do the boards for us. But Adam and I we'd write it and we'd voice it, and it would take, and we'd animate it and we'd export it and we'd make the marketing assets. Like, we did everything. There was no one else. And that took us in the first two episodes would take about 3 weeks working, like, you know, 80-hour weeks. So that was nuts. But then we started getting our process down a little better. The timeline stretched, you know, to like 6 weeks when we were making like season four. And we started getting more animation staff. And now it takes about 8 weeks because we just keep making the process more refined, and I know it gets longer, but that's because we're just trying to beef these episodes up more and more. We keep getting comments like people want it to be longer, we want to make it longer. Like, our ideas, we could, you know, we have ideas for like hour long episodes just about the Garpax, but like we're not going to be able to make all that stuff. So we're always pushing that, and as a result, like, we've had to plan ahead more. But the 8 weeks can be challenging because we want to stay as topical as possible. So sometimes we try to think of things like to put in at the last minute, so that it feels like it's up to date. You know, well, if a team loses in the playoffs that we had like winning, we'll have to update that. Like, we had that issue with the Bucks season. There's the Bucks last year, and we had the famous scene with Brian Longcollars that we made in like a week. So there's some exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, I would say it's hard because we definitely aren't working at the speed of NBA conversation, which is like changes week to week. And it's like the memes feel old, you know, like that we reference memes that are like you don't even remember by the time the playoffs come around, that are like, you know, from early like All-Star break or before then or early season. And that's why we kind of came up with we kind of settled on the idea that our stories would be telling the story of the season, and it's kind of a fun look back at the season. So like, this scene takes place when this was happening. So like, if a scene makes fun of, let's say, the Pacers for being mediocre, it's because at that time they were mediocre, and you're kind of going through in time throughout the season. That's what the previous seasons were, at least 4, 5, and 6, those seasons. So so that was kind of how we dealt with that.
It's been super helpful having the experts at Bleacher Report, people that know basketball inside and out, and they just know it on a level of detail that like we could never possibly achieve ourselves. And we've integrated that into our process where after we're done writing a first draft, we're coming up even sometimes just with the concept, we'll run it by experts like Howard Beck and, you know, like Chris Trenchard and these different editors. And also, or there's other people in the office who have expertise in like the game NBA 2K that we talk to them, or they know, like, there's a one Phoenix fan, you know, that's like in the office that we talk to about the Sun Kings. And so we'll use them to varying degrees. You know, we'll consult with them about what we could, Easter eggs we can put in the background, or do we have like this inside joke, right? You know, with the Celtics episode, we have two diehard Celtics fans that we talk to a lot. And they, fed us like all the Time Lord jokes and all those things. Like, they just kind of just get so excited to talk about these things, and we can just feel like, okay, this will really resonate with Celtics fans. So we want to get this right and that right. I don't know, Adam, if anything else.
Yeah, I'll just say that like we are obsessive about not making mistakes, and so like I know it seems silly for such a silly cartoon, but like, it's like I want every episode to feel like if you're a fan of that team, this is written by fans of that team or that thing or that whatever. So like it's very frustrating to me. Like I get frustrated as a Philly fan if like something is written and it's not getting it right. Like there's movies where the accents are wrong and stuff like that. That stuff bothers me. So we kind
Silver
of
Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. We always kind of want to run our episodes by the experts to just make sure that everything's good. We're not going to get like we got a number wrong once back in 20. We put Tony Parker's number on Manu Ginobili once, and it was like kills me to this day. That was like season 4, and like we actually just so happened that we QC everything. We have a great QC department who checks everything, and like and they we run everything by them. And somehow like we have so many people in that last episode. We have like that whole room full of NBA players, and it's Spencer Dinwiddie's number is like his number. He changed his number I think like midway through the season. Yeah. Like that's what we have is 8. So we ourselves are not like we don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of things. Like we just always lean on the experts. Like that's just what we're comfortable doing.
Speaking of kind of team specific content, you know, and making sure every team can enjoy it and their fan base, you know, after the Warriors' first championship, Steve Kerr asked you guys to make a special episode about the Warriors that was full of inside jokes about their players and their coaches. And it was amazing. I loved it. He wanted to show it to the team on the first day of training camp. That had to be so cool for you guys. You know, what was it like to make that Warriors centric episode? I know they sent you guys, you know, tons of notes about different inside jokes and the players, but what was it like to make that episode to know you guys were showing it to the NBA team?
I would say it was both absolutely awesome and a tiny bit frustrating. And so the reason it was awesome was obvious. I mean, like we were literally just talking to Steve Kerr on the phone and he was just telling us inside jokes. And Nick Uren, the assistant coach, like he was feeding us tons of stuff. He's giving us these emails, just long documents of like, and you know, like Draymond is always yelling at this guy. And like Iggy always does like this plays tricks on people where he like does like a fake trust fall on and scares people. It was like all these things. And so we're like scrambling to integrate as much of that into it. But where it was frustrating was that we had like, this is my like Game of Thrones purity that was bothering me, is that like we kind of had to break a lot of our universe in order to accommodate what we wanted to do in the scene. So we made them all sorts of different characters and we put it out as if it was like another Game of Zones episode, but it was really like this special thing that like diverged from the show.
Yeah.
And so there were also like inside jokes in there that we knew no one would really get. Like I forget the guy who was the bartender at
Brandon Rush.
Brandon
Rush. Thank you. Yeah. So Brandon Rush always says like to the players, get what you need. He says it like exactly like that. Like Nick Uren like recorded it for us or something or sent us a clip. And so we put that in there, but it's like, when you watch someone else's inside jokes, you know, like it's always like not that exciting if like you don't know what's being referenced. So it just like seems like a joke, but I think if it's the Warriors, like I guess that's okay because people are like dying to know what their inside jokes are. But
it was weird from a broad perspective because I don't know how appealing that the episode was, you know, from when we're not using jokes that everybody knows, but it was certainly a bizarre experience to see. Like we got video of them all. We posted the video of them all watching.
Yeah,
and, like,
I love that.
When we got that video, yeah, it was crazy. It's like to see like Steph like chewing on his napkin and cracking up. Like that was like, and he's watching us do his voice. Like that was so weird.
Yeah,
that was so weird.
We'd spent weeks drawing all their faces. Like you don't understand. You study their face in such detail for like a full day. You're just staring at Steph Curry's face, and then all of a sudden you see his face like laughing at it. It's like this, it's just a bizarre experience.
Yeah, but they're cool.
Yeah, that's they're awesome. Very cool. We're big fans.
Yeah,
so do you guys sort of share duties, like what is each of your roles basically in the process? I mean, like is one of you more of the animator, like is one of you more of a voice actor, or is it kind of just split 50-50?
So that's an interesting question. So the big answer is that Craig and I do a lot of the same. We overlap on everything. So we both do everything, but there are parts of the process that like I'll take more initiative and there's parts of the process Craig takes more initiative. I would say that generally speaking, I'm more of the writer and Craig's more of the director, meaning like I'll be in charge of the script. I'll handle the script and doing all that stuff. But Craig has a big part in that too. But then once it's, and then the transitional part is recording. So, we'll do the voices. And once like it's into, we record it, like at once we're recording, like Craig saying, do read it this way. Don't do it this way. Try it like this. And then once Craig, a huge part of this is the audio assembly, which is like, we have like, our process is like very unique, I think. But like, so Craig then like takes days and he is just in his computer and he's putting all the takes together, because so much of the choices that make something funny is the timing and the thing and the choice of which take to use and stuff like that. And then from that point on, I think Craig is more in charge. I've always, as a like older brother with like creative ADD stuff, I've been always a starter, like an idea guy, like a million ideas. And Craig is a finisher. Like he finishes things and he's very detail oriented. And so it's that means we fight a lot and there's a lot of stress in the process, but it also is like, we're very lucky that like we have this complete package together. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Craig.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say in terms of voices, Adam does a majority of the voices. Like it's probably like a 60-40, maybe 70-30 split, because I oftentimes will just prefer to sit at the computer recording him. And Adam has a little more versatility. So Adam can do like more of the, like a lot of the deep, like guys with like the raspy voices. He'll be a lot of the coaches.
Like this. Draymond Greens and Jimmy Butlers. And
yeah. And I'll be like, you know, Kyle Lowry. And I'll say, you know, he's my friend. You can't take him. Shush, Norman. And then what we'll do is we'll modulate our voices up and down so that we can like multiply what we can do. So then we'll have like a Scottish voice variant, and then we'll have like a Cockney accent.
On the fucking wall.
I don't know. What
yeah, you're good. You can.
That's my stand band.
I love it.
That stand band, uncensored. That's what you're getting to.
At eight. Yeah.
That's like basically the character Fat Bastard from what's
Austin
the
Powers? Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah.
But yeah, and then
I always thought it was Shrek.
Oh yeah, it is sort of Shrek. Wait, that's the same guy.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah.
So Mike Myers. Like
Myers. The same character.
Yeah. G-rated versus R-rated Mike Myers.
Scottish accent. Yeah. He's the only Scottish voice I know.
Yeah. That's our only exposure to Scotland. Adam's more of a starter, I'm more of a finisher. I think Adam basically summed it up.
But as far as the animation too, I Craig would use, when we started, I did more design and Craig did more of the animation. So yeah. I would do a lot of the designs and the heads and things like that. And Craig would then build the mouths and we kind of split the animation. But now we don't do any animation basically because we have a team for that.
I like to focus on like a lot of the character acting. And so I like to build the expressions, because a lot of times it's like so much is communicated with proper expressions, and our style is so realistic that if you don't give them good expressions, it looks really stiff and off. And so that's been a big part of the process, especially now. I do these videos that take forever, but I like to act out every single shot and put that over the storyboards to just help the animators so they know what each character should be doing in the scene, because we have to make this so quickly. There's not a lot of time to like iterate and revise shots. So we kind of have to get right on the first try. And so that's been helping that. It's super laborious.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from players, either with the way they're portrayed or how they're drawn? I know, for example, we did an interview with the people that do the designs for NBA 2K, and they said, you know, players always have comments about how they look or how skinny they were or, you know, this and that. You know, as you mentioned, the Warriors video, you got to see them react and they all loved it and were cracking up. But overall, what kind of feedback have you gotten from players or coaches that are included?
Well, we haven't gotten any feedback on like players' likenesses from players or anything like that. We did get feedback in the first ever one we put out. People thought that my design of Derrick Rose was Mario Chalmers, and that bothered me. So that's why it's so realistic now. As far as the designs here, we got, because I didn't want people getting that wrong anymore. I didn't want them to spend any time thinking about that. As far as the players in it, everyone's been a really good sport. And I'm actually amazed. And, you know, Craig says that this, you know, it has to do with the fact that these guys are criticized, like, you know, in serious ways. All that they're so used to criticism that, like, a cartoon, there's something I think that's just disarming about it. But we've been pleasantly surprised by how good of a sport everyone is. And I think that if we do receive criticism, it's probably more in the form of just not speaking about it or silence than like people actively. I think it's kind of a bad look for someone to like lose their mind over our portrayal.
That's true.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. Like, I'm trying to picture like someone made fun of like being upset that they're like dressed in medieval clothing and speaking with a British accent and talking about how their defense is weak or something.
I will say that. We have two more episodes left.
Yeah, we'll see.
One person, I'm like, hopefully. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
Also, one thing I'll say is we become friendly with Daryl Morey through this process. He's happened. We found out he was a fan of like our cartoon Sports Friends before the one before, and when we made the last joke in the last episode about James Harden disappearing in the playoffs or disappear like James Harden in meaningful playoff game. Which we know, like, you know, we can't, even though we're friends with people, we can't pander. We have to make the joke that's there. But he posted the stats that show that James Harden does not disappear in playoff games. So he retorted us with the evidence, and that's fine. That's fine. Yes, it is true. The joke was not an evidence-based joke. It was a culturally based joke.
I love it. I mean, you guys talked about how now you have more animators and everything, but who is the hardest NBA player to draw? Who's the hardest, you know, when you or coach? I mean, of all the people you've drawn, who's the toughest?
For some reason, I think white guys with wrinkles. So it's hard.
Yeah, our styles.
Like, I did a Pau Gasol face and like Jack Nicholson. But a lot of the older guys who have more wrinkles, that gets hard. I have a tough time. We don't have that many women in our cartoon, but like I have a tough time with women for some reason, but I haven't done designs in a while, so I don't know if you have anything to, like it's we've you know, for the last couple seasons I haven't done a design since season 4, so but back in my day the experience was difficult with older white characters for some reason.
Because the gradients don't look good, but like I would definitely say the wrinkles are and facial hair basically the ideal head to design is like a Richard Jefferson or someone who's just like just shaved everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, like that helps.
I think a lot of people would like to look like Richard Jefferson. Realistically, you know, now that you guys have worked in the sports medium, is that something that you want to continue doing, or is that something that you prefer to kind of stay away from, having done it once, especially you, Craig, knowing that, you know, you're not a huge sports fan to begin with? Because I think you've got something really good here going, and I'll be tuning in for the next projects no matter what they are, but I'm curious if you think they'll be sports related or not.
You want me to I think that it's weird, we've kind of carved this niche of like sports cartoons and we've gotten really good at it. And it's an interesting specific genre. But for us, we want to test out whether or not our storytelling skills and comedy skills translate more broadly with our own original characters. You know, we've had having your main characters be such notable, famous people like LeBron James, James Harden, like it gives you a boost. It gives you like a rocket boosters to get your stuff to be more easily noticed and accessible. But we want to see if we can swim without those swimmies on.
We made the horse things famous.
Yeah, it's true. and so I think that that's our next challenge. Like we feel like one of the reasons that this for us is our last season and we want to try something different is just like we feel like we've taken this as far as it can go. And the challenge for us, the challenge this season was, can we tell a cohesive story with our final season and like wrap this up elegantly? And that was a new challenge to us. But now the next great challenge is to see whether or not our stuff translates and try something new, because we feel like we've made all the medieval basketball jokes we can possibly make. And there's some inherent challenges with sports cartoons. There's problems with having your main characters be celebrities besides just the fact that One is you don't own their likenesses, and there's some stuff there. But it's also like you never have to worry about like their Cartman's real feelings or what Cartman's going to do in real life or the narrative on Cartman changing. You know, just give one example of the character. You know, like you have a little more control. It does. You know, I think. Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add, Craig. I'm running out of steam.
I think you've summed it up pretty much. I would just say Adam and I have always had a lot of interests outside of sports, especially me. I really like science. I like history and philosophy and politics. And it would be fun to have a canvas, like a cartoon concept that it allows us to dip into whatever we're interested in talking about more broadly. I think that is something that, you know, like there's a lot that goes on in the world and like, you know, we're only in the basketball sliver of that. I think that's something we're excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget what I was going to say, but it was something else really good and it just fell out of my brain. Oh yes. I know what I was going to say. It's sort of like, I look at it like Jordan going to play baseball, and that's not to say that we're Michael Jordan.
Like, we'll be back next year making Game of Thrones.
But it's sort of like, we want to go try play baseball, you know, and like maybe if you watch his reasoning for wanting to go play baseball, it was like he had done everything he felt he can do in the NBA, and he was like, I want to do this. I want to try this, and I want to see if I can do it. And so by that analogy, we could be making Game of Thrones again in a year and a half. But I sort of look at, I think Craig and I sort of look at it like that. Like we've done what we could with this, and now we want to try to see if we can succeed in something different and more challenging.
That makes sense. I have to ask, this is the final season of Game of Zones. How did you guys feel about the final season of Game of Thrones?
HBO is a sister company, so we loved it.
True, yes.
I think after season 5, you could really feel the show diverging from the books. I think that George R. R. Martin is the secret sauce of why Game of Thrones is so special. He chooses scenes and things to focus on that I think like no one else does, and does it so well. And that undergirding the show was made it what it was to me. Everyone talked about last season, but I think like the last few seasons, like the show really changed. The characters got a little more like derivative, like it used to be so nuanced.
Yeah.
And then it became like every character had like this internal struggle. Like Jaime Lannister was so interesting. And then basically everyone kind of got polarized into like good and evil in a very basic way towards the end. And everything got simplified. And instead of being this messy, realistic world, it became this clean, like Hollywood world. And that was all the magic kind of evaporated. Those are my thoughts. I don't know, Adam.
Yeah, I think Craig and I have talked about this enough to know that like my opinion is basically expressed with what Craig said. Like I thought the show was an incredible, the best show ever. In the beginning, and then I did think it tapered off. I can appreciate the challenges that they had in trying to wrap up a universe that really wasn't meant to be wrapped up. Like it was, you know, like they say George R. R. Martin's like a gardener and he lets things kind of go organically. But the problem is, like the real world, when you're building something that is gardens like that, it doesn't like there's no perfect ending, you know, that makes sense. It's sort of like things just go on their own. So it was I think it was very, very difficult challenge to end it, but I was disappointed by the final season. And we hope only, though, that we can match the disappointment people had in Game of Thrones' this final season with our final season. it'd be the ultimate meta parody.
I love that. Without trying to steal your intellectual property,
I love a question that starts off like that.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
No, please let me steal your intellectual property. You said you've made all of the medieval sports jokes, medieval basketball jokes you could probably make.
Yeah.
What are some universes that you'd like to explore, like in the future, that are away from that? Maybe like what are some other universes you'd want to, that you think could be ripe for content there? Mm-hmm.
The Renaissance. Well,
yeah, just kidding. The Renaissance, but with football.
Yeah. I want to do the 1800s for tennis. But
I think that was a real thing.
I love history in all forms. I'm interested in that. We toyed with doing one of the, I'll tell you this possible alternate ending we had for Game of Thrones, or for Game of Zones, that actually we got something we toyed with, which was that we pull out wide and we see that the whole world, it's actually Westworld, and that Adam Silver has like the Game of Zones world is like the West world, Western world, and then we do like the second universe outside of it where we do a Westworld parody, and that Game of Zones was just their like Wild West.
They're all like robots that like look, yeah, like medieval guy, like basketball players.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see what you guys chose to go with, because that would have been amazing.
Yeah, I think that was more amazing than what we went with.
Yeah. Last thing for you guys, I know you guys got to run. Is there a certain episode that you feel is your best, or one that maybe took the longest, where if someone maybe hasn't seen the show and you're trying to say, hey, here's what we do, here's what we're all about, you know, that you would show them? Is there one that stands out to you?
The Game of Thrones starter kit.
Okay. I think it's two different answers. One, like what I think is our best episode, and I'm not just saying this as a way to promote the show, but is the one that I think is coming out on Thursday. And I hate saying that because I never want to set expectations high. But in terms of the production challenges, it is like our biggest accomplishment because it's the longest episode. We actually are calling it the long episode. Mm. And just so there's so much that happens. So I'm really proud of it from just like an animation standpoint. But in terms of the starter kit, you know, I've always loved the lottery episode. I love the ones where people kind of chime in things from the background. I like the episodes that feature the what we call lower houses, the bottom 14 houses. There's also the trade winds episode with, Kyle Lowry trading for the horse Serge and everything. Ibaka. Yeah. Serge Ibaka, with Orlando. I just that one always has a special place in my heart. I like the call and response kind of episodes, but it's hard. It's like choosing a favorite child. You know, they each have their different qualities.
I would say though, for you, we talk about the Game of Thrones starter kit. Like, I think what it should be, if I was like introducing someone to Game of Thrones, I would have them take like a BuzzFeed quiz that was like, which Game of Thrones episode are you? And I'd be like, do you watch Game of Thrones? Like, who's your favorite team? Do you like Monty Python? And after the answer to that, they're probably a specific episode for everybody. That's one of the cool things that we've learned from this experience. Is like, everybody has their different favorite episode. I'm personally partial to the Isle of Van Gundy's because it's so weird and silly. I love that episode. But if someone were asking me like what episode, if I never, what should I watch? It might be the Raptors one. I think Craig may have mentioned the recent Raptors one. Where the Kawhi trade happens, like that to me was like one of the best overall episodes. And same with the Bucks episode from season 5, where Jason Kidd declares that he's an asshole and then leaves. That one is another classic one. But I like them all. Every episode has its merits, and so it is hard to pick one. But those two stand out for me. I will say recently. Now, the stock is rising on the raid of Stables Castle. Like, that one was so epic and was such a frustrating thing to write. And we didn't even get a finish. Like, in terms of, like, I felt like we had to turn in the script too early, so I wasn't thrilled with it at first. But, like, now looking back, I think it's a really good episode. So that's another underrated one, I think.
For sure. Brian, anything else you want to add here?
Best of luck to your Sixers, man. I think you write Sixers content well. The Joel Embiid, Markelle Fultz 1K episode was one of my favorites. So I think that you can tell when someone's writing what they know, writing what they love. And yeah, I think that I hope that you get a parade of some type to reflect on at some point in the future, because Philly does crazy stuff when they win parades and when they win championships.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horse poop.
Nothing more medieval than eating horse poop. So if the Sixers win, I'll be right there, you know, in my medieval outfit eating horse poop with my hands. just like anything.
I don't think an hour and a half for me. It might be worth coming down for that.
Well,
But as you know, as far as the process episode, by the way, I'll just say that that episode is another one that was like near and dear to my heart as well. And that one, I was obsessing on writing. I'm like, this has to be perfect. This is my opus. This is, you know. So that was one we took pretty seriously. So thank you for mentioning that.
I love it. Well, Craig, Adam, thank you guys so much for joining us. We know things are crazy right now, so thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us here on the podcast. And we cannot wait to watch the rest of the season. Everyone, Game of Zones, Thursday, make sure you're tuning in. Bleacher Report, we'll include some links in the description as well for people that want to check it out. But thank you guys for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, that's been great being on.
Yeah, fun. Thank you so much for watching and taking the time to talk to us. Yeah.
Keep up the great work. We're excited to see what you guys have going in the future, too, what your next project is. If you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.